This show originally aired earlier today.
This is Radio Boston, a special broadcast of Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Stephanie Ebert, Boston Globe reporter.
This November, Massachusetts voters will decide on three state ballot questions. One of them, question three, asks whether voters approve of the state law banning discrimination based on gender identity in public accommodations. A yes vote keeps the current law in place. A no vote would repeal it.
Today, advocates on both sides of question three join us for a debate brought to you by WBUR, the McCormick Graduate School at UMass Boston, and the Boston Globe.
And first, we're going to introduce this debate about ballot question number three with this report from WBUR's Steve Brown.
The law at issue here makes it illegal to deny service to transgender people in hotels, stores, restaurants, or other public places. It was overwhelmingly passed by the legislature and signed by Governor Baker and has been in effect for a little over 2 years.
When that law went into effect in 2016, it changed my life.
Kelly Jenkins says she knows what it is like to be discriminated against because of her gender identity.
I've been refused service in a restaurant simply for being transgender. I've been asked to leave a place. Asked is a polite word. I've been told to leave a place for using the women's restroom. And those things have a lasting impact on me that I still have with me when I moved up here to Massachusetts.
Jenkins came here from Eastern Tennessee back in 2014, 2 years before the transgender public accommodation law was passed. She's been working as a teaching assistant at Wellesley Middle School for the past 3 years, and she expects to have her own classroom next year. The law empowers Jenkins to be what she calls her authentic self.
I'm still nervous that I'm going to be discriminated against, but I know I have this law in this state that it protects me, and it gives me the ability to do my job and feel fairly safe so that I can go out there in the world and make a difference and teach these children.
Jenkins says she knew she made the right decision to come to Massachusetts when she arrived for her job interview and spotted a giant rainbow flag inside the school. Her co-workers, including Eileen Sharp, say Jenkins is an asset to the school.
She's a great teacher. She's a phenomenal colleague. She's collegial. She's willing to share parts of herself and her story with our staff and with students in a classroom that's studying gender identity and expression.
Sharp questions claims by those who say they oppose the law because of a safety risk created by its requirement that transgender people can use restrooms and locker rooms consistent with their stated identities.
Acting in an appropriate and respectful manner, no matter what restroom you're in, is important. And I don't see it as an issue that transgender people are more dangerous than people who are not transgender.
Still, opponents of the law argue in this TV commercial that safety and privacy are at risk.
What does Massachusetts question three mean to you? It means any man who says he is a woman can enter a woman's locker room, dressing room, or bathroom at any time, even convicted sex offenders.
The law's opponents moved quickly after it was enacted 2 years ago, gathering the necessary 34,000 signatures to get the repeal on the ballot.
I believe that it is a danger to all women and children in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Debbie Dugan chairs the group Keep Massachusetts Safe, which is backing the repeal effort.
It's not about discrimination. It is truly about safety and privacy in these public spaces where women are partially dressed. You know, they're either changing in and out of a swimsuit, or they are changing, trying on clothes at a Macy's, for instance, or they've gone into a public bathroom to use, and or locker rooms, you know, for our daughters.
The desire for privacy and safety, Dugan says, is common sense. Despite warnings from opponents of the law that it puts safety at risk, a recent study from the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law finds that the Massachusetts public accommodations laws that include gender identity do not affect the number or frequency of criminal incidents in restrooms, locker rooms, or changing rooms. There are some concerns on both sides that voters may be confused over how to cast their ballots, since the wording of the referendum is not entirely clear. A yes vote keeps the transgender public accommodations law on the books. A no vote repeals it.
That's WBUR's Steve Brown. I want to remind you, this is a special Radio Boston broadcast on Question 3. And listeners, we want to invite you to take part in this hour-long debate. Do you support keeping the 2016 state law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender identity? Or do you think it should be repealed? Are you concerned about safety in women's restrooms in particular? Or do you think that might not be the real issue here? What questions do you have for those on both sides of this debate? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. And before we jump in, I want to just tell everyone what the ground rules are here. Candidates will have 1 minute to respond to each question, followed by a 1 minute rebuttal. We, the moderators, Stephanie Ebert and I, will be able to ask follow-up questions of both candidates' responses at our discretion. We do have a light in our studio right now to keep time. Green means that that's when the minute starts to answer the question. Yellow means that the candidate has 15 seconds left. And red means time is up. So, listeners, there are several ways you can participate. We are broadcasting a Facebook live feed of today's event. You can also go to bostonglobe.com, radioboston.org, as well as on Facebook at WBUR or the McCormick School to watch this feed. We want to introduce our guests for today's debate. Supporting the current Massachusetts law that prohibits discrimination or a yes vote on question three is the group Freedom for All Massachusetts. Casey Seffredini is attorney and co-chair of the Yes on Three campaign, also transgender. Welcome, Casey.
Thank you for having me.
And opposing the state law and asking for a no vote on question three is the group Keep Massachusetts Safe. Andrew Beckwith is president of the Massachusetts Family Institute, part of this campaign. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be here.
Okay, so let's begin. We should say we had a coin toss before the start of this debate as to who would give the first opening statement and the last closing statement in this debate. So first, we're going to hear from Andrew Beckwith, president of the Massachusetts Family Institute, representing the no side.
Thank you. I think we can all agree that everyone deserves to feel comfortable and safe when they're using a locker room, bathroom, changing area, or public shower. And that includes women who don't want men in their private spaces. But this law that we're trying to repeal tells those women they have no right to object to a male presence. It allows any man at any time to enter women's spaces if he claims to identify as a woman. Under this law, men can demand to be treated as if they actually are women, even if they haven't had surgery or hormones or medical diagnosis. They don't even need to identify as a woman consistently. In fact, a registered sex offender could abuse this law to gain access to women in various stages of undress. And women who object to this invasion of their privacy by a male body can be punished criminally and financially if they speak up or try to stop it. What about their dignity? We need to repeal this law, and that's why I'm voting no on question three.
Okay. Casey Seffredini, co-chair of the Yes on Three campaign.
I'm a transgender man, and I care about a yes on three vote because I have faced discrimination in public spaces, and I don't want anybody else to have to go through that. Today, no on three is going to say a lot of things that are untrue. I will not have time to correct each one, so I encourage listeners to follow along in live time on our Twitter feed at freedom_mass, M-A-S-S, for a fact check. This law was negotiated for 10 years. The community consensus around this law is probably the broadest support that any ballot measure in Massachusetts has ever had. These are large and small businesses, labor unions, law enforcement officers, assault prevention groups, conservatives and progressives. They don't agree on many things, but they agree on a yes on three because we should all treat each other with dignity and respect.
Okay. Opening statements. And now we will ask questions. And I just want to say our lines are almost full with questions from our listeners as well. But first, Stephanie, and I will ask questions. I'll ask the first one. Casey, let's just start. I mean, I know you had your minute to say this in your opening statement, and you are transgender, and you talked about that a little bit. But why do we have to keep this law as is? Is it an imperfect law?
Well, like I said, the law was negotiated for 10 years. There are a number of folks, including the governor himself, who opposed the law in 2010 and went on a long evolution, having the opportunity to meet transgender people and getting to know us. You know, the law is very clear. It has language in it that was not there in 2010 that says it cannot be asserted for an improper purpose. It's very clear there's been no illegal incidents before this law was passed. There have been no illegal incidents since this. And it's, you know, very clear that folks can be stopped and held accountable if there is a problem. But at the end of the day, there are young people all across this Commonwealth, Ian, Brandon, Nicole, Ashton, folks whose parents worry every day that they won't be able to go to a movie theater without facing discrimination just because of who they are. And I think we can all agree that that's wrong and that we should treat each other with dignity and respect.
Andrew, you and your and fellow opponents argue that the language of this law is too broad and that it leaves room for people to take advantage of it. Say a man could walk into a women's restroom claiming to be transgender, actually intending to commit sex crimes. What in the law leads you to believe that that will happen? And wasn't that always possible before the law was enacted?
Well, what one of the problems of this law is that it's based on the current legal definition of gender identity in Massachusetts, which I referenced in my opening. Doesn't require any type of surgery or hormones or medical diagnosis. A lot of people I talk to think that when someone claims a transgender identity, that they've had to have had the full surgery, and that's simply not the case. Under the Massachusetts law, all that is required is that it is an identity that's sincerely held, which is impossible to police. So therefore, it's be very easy for any man, for any reason, to go into a woman's space and simply claim that at that moment he identifies as female, because again, under the Massachusetts law, it doesn't even have to be a consistent identity. So it's very broad and vague, and we're concerned that, that would make it ripe for abuse and put women at risk.
So I wonder, Casey, how would you respond to that, to the potential of bad intentions here, and how to protect people against folks who might have bad intentions? How would you make sure that that was addressed?
Well, you know, the reason we have such broad support from large and small businesses and from law enforcement officers and sexual assault prevention experts across the state is because the law actually puts in place much needed clarity around these exact issues. The law itself says it cannot be used for an improper purpose. Gender identity actually has to be consistently and uniformly held, which means you can't switch it from day to day.
It's not true.
And it's that is true. That's in the law itself. No, people should actually read it. And, you know, It's very clear under this law that if somebody is doing something suspicious, they can absolutely be stopped and nobody will be in trouble for doing that. But if they're just going about their daily lives, minding their own business, we have to let them be. And I think that that is something that most people in Massachusetts can get behind. We all just want to be able to, you know, move along with our daily lives, take care of our families, do a good job at work, bring the groceries home at the end of the day, and be left alone if we're not doing anything wrong.
Okay, I think, Andrew, let's let you respond to that.
Yeah, just briefly. So the definition of gender identity in Massachusetts law, which is Chapter 4, Section 7, Paragraph 59, passed, as you are well aware, Casey, in 2011, in which this law rests on, says that gender-related identity may be shown by providing evidence, including, but not limited to, and that's where they say consistent uniform assertion, but can also be shown by any other evidence that the gender-related identity is sincerely held. So it is not a requirement that it's consistent. That is one way to demonstrate it, but it's not required. It boils down to having a sincerely held identity, and that's impossible to police.
And your response to that, Casey, what would you say?
Well, the law itself is very clear that there's different kinds of evidence that people can proffer. But I think the important thing for voters to know as they think about what to do on this question is they are going to hear a number of anecdotes throughout the afternoon that do not involve transgender people, that do not involve people asserting this law and saying that they get the protection of this law for the crimes that they're engaging in. The law does not allow people to do anything illegal. They can be stopped and held accountable, and they are. And what voters really need to be aware of is, at the end of the day, this is about people like me just trying to go about our daily lives. People like Nicole Talbot, she's a 17-year-old transgender girl. She's like any other teenage girl. She wants to shop at Sephora. She wants to be a professional singer someday. But she can't be a professional singer in a theater that won't let her in because she happens to be transgender. And that's what this law is all about.
Okay, I want to make sure we get some callers in here. Siobhan is calling from Newburyport. Siobhan, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Just to note, my son is transgender, and he is not an animal, a freak, or any other strange being. And he has, his life intention is not to hurt or maim any other person on the planet. I do, the wording of the law states that it's equality for all, even outside of the bathroom, meaning going into a restaurant, a store, or anywhere else. I don't understand how anyone would fight that on any basis, that all people should be created equal or treated equally. And I think the fear-mongering of what transgender or who transgender people are is really obnoxious and nasty. They've obviously never met anyone that is transgender, because more transgender people get killed by straight people than people that are transgender hurting others. And I just, it's just a shame and a sham, and that this law should stay as is, if not improved, into the future. That's basically all I have to say.
Okay, thanks so much, Siobhan. Andrew Beckwith, how would you address that?
Yeah, sure. So 2 points. First of all, this campaign is really not about the transgender issue. This is about privacy and safety in bathrooms and locker rooms and intimate places like that. And the reason why we've called this law the bathroom bill is because functionally that is the only place where the law has changed since this bill was passed in 2016. The Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination submitted a letter to the legislature in October of 2015 making it clear that they have the authority, and they had the authority already at that time, to process gender identity discrimination claims in public accommodations. So if this law were to be repealed, nobody's rights would be any different when it comes to restaurants, movie theaters, hospitals, places like that. The only area that would be different would be the bathrooms and the locker rooms, and that's where you have the concern.
Casey, I want you to have a minute to respond to that before we take some more calls.
Absolutely. I think we can all agree, Andrew and I are both lawyers, that an advisory opinion from a state agency is not the same and does not offer the same clarity and uniformity as a statewide law. That's why large and small businesses support this law. And, you know, transgender people, you know, we're human beings. We have to use the restroom sometimes. We use, you know, we are just as modest when we're in those places as anybody else. And, you know, at the end of the day, what this is really about is respect and dignity for everybody and safety for all. And it's very clear that this law does not impact anybody's safety, but it does make sure that transgender people are able to go about our daily lives.
Okay, we're going to get to some of the evidence about safety in a moment, but I want to go to Zach, who is calling from Boston. Zach, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just have a question. I'm concerned with the potential implications of, you know, I'm open to society changing, but I'm concerned about the precedent set forth by changing biological fact of human sex and equating that to and changing that on behalf of emotions and society saying that we should, because people feel a certain way about it. Humans are traditionally taught that we're born with 10 fingers and scientific abnormalities can occur. Do you get what I'm saying?
I do. Biology is biology. Is that what you're saying, Zach?
Yes.
Okay. Let's let Casey answer that briefly.
You know, I think if you've never had the opportunity to meet a transgender person, it can be really challenging to understand what it means to be transgender. You know, my family is very supportive of me, but they had questions when I first came to them and explained to them what was going on with me. You know, I think the most important thing to keep in mind is, you know, we're all human beings. We're all neighbors. We're family members. We're friends. We're coworkers. And at the end of the day, we don't have to understand everything about each other to be able to treat each other decently and with dignity and respect. And that's what Yes on Three is all about. That's why there's so much support for it. And it doesn't put anybody in risk at the process, which is why law enforcement and sexual assault prevention experts resoundingly support a Yes on Three.
And I'm wondering just briefly, Andrew, do you think Zach has a point?
Absolutely. I mean, we have men's rooms and women's rooms because male bodies and female bodies are different. And that's really all we're trying to maintain a recognition of, is that women should not be forced to be in intimate places with male bodies. And I think most women, it doesn't matter to them how the person who has that male body identifies. If it is a male, intact, anatomically male body with male genitalia in the locker room or shower next to them, that may make them uncomfortable. And what the Yes on Three campaign fails to do is to respect that concern at all.
Okay, we're going to have to go to a break right now, but I want to tell our listeners to stay with us. We're continuing this debate on ballot question 3 in Massachusetts. It seeks to repeal the 2-year-old state law that prohibits discrimination based on gender identity. A yes vote would keep the current law. A no vote would repeal it. We've got both sides in studio with us to talk about this, and you can call us at 800-423-8255 to get in on the conversation. I'm Deborah Becker. I'm here with Stephanie Ebert from the Boston Globe, and this is Radio Boston. Welcome back to a special Radio Boston broadcast, a debate on ballot question 3 in Massachusetts. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Stephanie Ebert with the Boston Globe. In 3 weeks, voters will decide whether to keep the current law that prohibits discrimination based on gender identity in public spaces. We have both sides in the studio to talk about this.
And listeners, a reminder, we want to hear from you this hour. Do you support the 2016 state law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of gender identity, or do you think it should be repealed? You can call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston.
A study released last month by researchers at the Williams Institute at the UCLA School of Law examined restroom crime reports in Massachusetts cities such as Medford, Melrose, and Newton, where local anti-discrimination ordinances were in place before the law was enacted statewide. They found no link between transgender bathroom access and crimes that occur in bathrooms, and no difference between the cities that did and did not have policies. In fact, they found very few bathroom incidents at all. This law has now been in place statewide for 2 years, so I want to pose to Andrew, why aren't we seeing the public safety risks that you are predicting?
Well, first of all, just to address that Williams Institute study, I mean, the Williams Institute is a left-wing think tank, so it does have its own bias, including one of its authors of that study, Jody Herman, is on record saying we shouldn't even have men's rooms and women's rooms at all. But I want to direct listeners' attention to a study put up by an organization called Woman Means Something, and they looked at Target, Target stores nationally, and found that sexual incidents, in particular voyeurism-related offense, increased significantly after the publication of Target's gender inclusion policy, which is similar to the Massachusetts law, in April of 2016. And they found a doubling in the amount of upskirt incidents after the policy and almost a tripling in the increase of Peeping Tom incidents. And in short, they found that sexual predators take advantage of policies like this.
Just to follow up, Andrew, that was a study that looked specifically at Targets.
That's right.
And did not compare. And was that not done by a right-wing organization?
I don't know which affiliation the group has. I think they have folks from across the spectrum, but they're all committed to the fact that biology matters and that woman means something.
Do you have any evidence in that case that the Target policy was brand new? I thought that that had been instituted previously to its being publicized in 2016.
Well, and that's the point. Once it's publicized, then you are attracting people who are looking to abuse it. But Boston 25 had a news story out, I think last week, about a young girl, a kindergarten girl, who was brutally sexually assaulted in the girls' room by a boy who identified as gender fluid. And that was down in Georgia. But I don't think we should have to wait until something like that happens here in Massachusetts before we fix this law, and we have to start by repealing it.
Can we have maybe Casey should respond to both the Target study and the incident in Georgia, I think.
Yeah. So first of all, with respect to the Target study, that was a report that was put out by an organization in Canada, not particularly relevant to Massachusetts, actually working to repeal or prevent transgender legislation there in Canada. So I think their perspective is really clear, you know, and you know, voters don't need to read these studies to know what to do here. They can look right here at home at what law enforcement officials say and what sexual assault prevention experts say, and they are all resoundingly with a yes on three. With respect to what happened in Georgia, it sounds like a terrible circumstance. We are still figuring out what was happening there. The facts are still coming out. But again, I would remind folks that, you know, this law does not allow anybody to go into a public facility to harm or harass somebody. And if they are, they should be stopped and held accountable. And they are.
But does it increase the likelihood that something bad could happen?
Well, I think we've seen from the studies that that doesn't appear to be the case. And I think we've seen from experience as well. You know, this law has only been in place statewide in Massachusetts for 2 years, but Boston has had a law like this since 2011. There are many states across the country that have had laws like this for decades. And yet the No on Three side really has to work really hard to come up with anecdotes that don't involve transgender people, don't involve people asserting this law for the acts and offenses that they're engaging in, and many of whom are actually stopped and held accountable for what they're doing, which is what they say this law doesn't do, which is untrue.
Okay. I want to make sure we get some callers in here. Elizabeth is calling from Revere. Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a grandmother. I'm a high school teacher that taught for many years in a red state out west, and I've had students that have been transgender, and I think they just want to be included in their chosen gender. We never had any issues in the bathrooms. This was pre-bathroom issue, and criminals that come in the bathrooms are criminals no matter what they are. I think we need separate bathrooms, but I think that transgender people are not even going to be noticed as transgender because they never try to stand out. They just use the restroom and leave, and you probably wouldn't even know. And I'm just wondering if this gentleman knows any transgender people.
If Andrew knows any transgender people.
I would imagine he wouldn't know that they were even in and out of the bathroom and weren't the same as he. We've never had any problems at our school. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Andrew, what do you say to Elizabeth?
Well, again, I just want to restate that our concerns really have nothing to do with individuals who identify as transgender. It's the abuse, the potential abuse of this law by people who are predators. And I think the caller's right. There are people who, you know, say there's a man who identifies as a woman and uses the woman's restroom. And if it doesn't cause a problem, if it doesn't make anyone uncomfortable, if there aren't any safety concerns, then you know, they would be able to continue to do that if this law is repealed. The difference is right now, if a anatomical male uses the women's locker room and biological women are made to feel uncomfortable. Maybe he's just in there taking a long time, putting on his socks, looking around. Those women can't complain or object or try and stop him because they would face discrimination lawsuits.
Casey.
Sounds like an improper purpose to me, and that person can be stopped. You know, there is no evidence of the kind of abuses that the No on Three campaign is talking about, but there is so much evidence of the discrimination that transgender people face. The Harvard School of Public Health put out a study that showed that 65% of transgender people in Massachusetts have faced discrimination in a public place, like a restaurant or a retail shop or a hospital. That's what this law is about. I have heard so many stories of people who have been discriminated against at a grocery store just trying to buy groceries, at a department store just trying to buy clothes, at a barber trying to get a haircut, at the bank. You know, if I get a call from my fiance when I'm on my way home from work and she says, you know, can you stop and pick up some oregano so we can cook dinner tonight? I want to be able to say yes and know I'm going to be able to do that. And that's what this law is about.
I want to take some more callers. Catherine is calling from Jamaica Plain. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question for Casey. I'm a cisgender person. That means I don't identify as transgender. So I was curious if you could speak to your own personal experience of what was the impact of the 2016 law for you? How did that impact your life?
Okay. Catherine, thanks so much. Casey, tell us about the law that's been in effect for about 2 years now.
Yeah, and I will try not to get emotional. You know, for people who this law doesn't impact, I think many of them probably didn't even know it was passed until they heard that it was on the ballot, if they've heard that it's on the ballot. But for transgender people and the people who love us, this law is everything. It is our ability to go out in public and not have to look over our shoulders. You know, the stories that I heard, Brandon Adams, who got up and testified in front of the Judiciary Committee, he was 14 years old, and he talked about the discrimination that he had faced, you know, with fellow kids. And he said to the legislature, I just want to go back to being a kid again. Just pass this law so I don't have to look over my shoulder anymore. This matters. And I think it matters not just to us and the people that love us, but the larger community of people who feel the sting of discrimination when any of us experience something like that and want to see all of us treated with fairness and respect.
So I'm wondering, Andrew Beckwith, what do you say to that? How do we as a state make sure that folks are not discriminated against and treated fairly here? I understand what you're saying about protection in restrooms, but in terms of protections for people so they're not discriminated against, what do we do?
Sure. Well, again, I want to make it clear that the existing law prior to this bill being passed already covered Casey's right to pick up oregano at the grocery store and basically everything except bathrooms and locker rooms. This is one of the situations I know Casey's familiar with that I think is important to talk about. It happened here in Massachusetts. The New Boston Post has a story about a female spa worker in Milton, Mass., who has faced a civil rights complaint because she declined to give a Brazilian bikini wax to a man who identified as a woman. And this man, in a 7-page complaint, goes into excruciating detail about his male parts and his intact genitalia and why it would be discrimination for this female spa worker to not want to touch him. Under the law we're trying to repeal, that transgender woman with a penis will probably win and force women like this female spa worker to either touch him in a way they're not comfortable with or lose their job.
Casey, can you respond to that? Is there any leeway for discomfort in situations like this? Is the anti-discrimination measure fair to all in businesses in that scenario?
Absolutely. This law does not require anybody to touch anybody that they don't want to touch. It's really clear that would be an improper purpose. However, what No One Three is not sharing with you is that, you know, this woman, and I'm glad that it was acknowledged at the end there that she's a transgender woman and not a man, she scheduled a manicure-pedicure, which is something that, you know, I don't get my nails done, but she's a human being and she does. And there are other men and women throughout the Commonwealth that do. And she scheduled a manicure-pedicure. And when the owner found out that she was a transgender woman, she canceled the appointment. I think we can all agree that that's wrong, that she should have her nails treated like anybody else. And, you know, it's about more than spas, right? It's about everywhere we go every day when we're not at home or work. It's about restaurants. It's about all the retail shops. It's about hospitals and moments of extreme vulnerability, whether or not we'll be served just because we happen to be transgender.
I want to make sure we get some more calls in here. Courtney is calling from Gloucester. Courtney, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I am the mom of both a teenage daughter and son, and my concern is not with transgender individuals in either bathroom, but people who wouldn't otherwise have access, so particularly men who wouldn't otherwise have access to a bathroom my daughter may be in, who now would. I've always told my daughter, don't get into elevators alone with men, don't go into a room alone with a man, whether it be somebody's office or any other situation like that. I will no longer be able to tell her that, and that's my biggest concern.
Hmm. All right, Courtney, thanks so much for the call. Bruce is also with us. Bruce is calling from Westboro. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hey, there's been a lot of talk in this debate about, you know, women being comfortable in the bathroom, and I want to point out there's another side of the coin here. I've worked with a transgender woman. She was a brilliant professional. I enjoyed working with her. I and everyone around me regarded her as a female because that was her outward appearance. If I walked into the men's room, and I'll call her Mary, and she was in there, my first reaction would be, Mary, what the hell are you doing in here? I think I would be pretty darn uncomfortable, and I think she would be too. So does this make any sense to have people who, you know, outwardly look like, you know, females to be in the men's room? This just makes no sense.
So I'm going to ask Casey to respond to both of those things. We've got some safety issues here from a woman who says that she's concerned about her daughter and what might happen here, and also folks who may feel uncomfortable. What do you do with those uncomfortable feelings, Casey? How do you address people who are just uncomfortable?
Yeah, you know, I understand if you've never met a transgender person and you're not familiar with people like us, it can be uncomfortable to sort of figure out what it means. And I've had people in my life, as I've come out to them, have a lot of questions and take their time becoming more comfortable. But, you know, Courtney, when I think about this issue, I think about somebody like Ian. You know, he's a teenager, he's transgender. His parents worry that he will face discrimination just going out with friends, going to a movie theater. He has a sister, And his parents support a yes vote on three, and they support these protections, and they certainly wouldn't support these protections for Ian at the expense of his sister. You don't have to take my word for it that this law works and that everybody is kept safe, including transgender people, but not just transgender people. You know, you can look to the law enforcement supporters. You can look to the sexual assault prevention supporters who've all come out and said resoundingly that we are all safer when each of us is treated with dignity and respect.
Andrews, since Massachusetts was the first state to legalize same-sex marriage and is a mostly blue liberal state, how do you convince a majority of people here to do away with rights that are already in place for transgender people?
Again, just to be clear, we're not doing away with any rights. They already exist under Massachusetts law because the Massachusetts Commission Against Discrimination interprets sex discrimination to include gender identity, as the Obama administration had done. And in bluest of blue Massachusetts, that's not likely to change anytime soon. But I want to just circle back to the Spa case because the co-chair for the Yes on Three campaign, Casey, your co-chair, Mesa Dunn, is the attorney who helped file this complaint. And in the complaint, this anatomical male is demanding that he get his genitals waxed by the female technician of his choice. And that is the type of thing that I couldn't even have predicted that this law would do, but it's one of the unintended consequences. And I would ask you, Casey, do you believe that female spa workers should have to touch anatomical men and their genitals if they're uncomfortable doing that?
You know what, Andrew? We are on a tight clock here because we are also being broadcast in the western part of the state right now. And so we only have 30 seconds. So I'm going to have Casey answer that after a break. I want to remind you that you're listening to a live debate on ballot question 3 in Massachusetts that asks voters whether to repeal the state law that prohibits discrimination based on gender identity. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is WBUR's Radio Boston. Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker.
And I'm Stephanie Ebert with the Boston Globe.
You're listening to a special broadcast of Radio Boston, a debate on ballot question 3. It asks voters whether to keep the Massachusetts law that prohibits discrimination based on gender identity. Joining us is Casey Seffredini, an attorney and co-chair of the Yes on 3 campaign. Also, Andrew Beckwith, president of the Massachusetts Family Institute, part of the campaign that is looking to repeal this state law. And listeners, we want to remind you that we welcome your questions and comments this hour. Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also tweet us at Radio Boston. And, you know, we ended this with Andrew asking Casey to respond to this case about a Brazilian waxing incident in Massachusetts. So Casey, I'm going to let you respond, and if we need to clarify, we'll do that along the way.
Of course, this law does not require people to touch other people if they don't want to. That is just patently false to even suggest that. And you don't have to take my word for it. Large and small businesses, there are hundreds across the state that have endorsed this law, would not have done so if it does. But it's important for voters to think about what message we send if we repeal this law. If we repeal this law, we take a proactive stance as a state saying that we are comfortable and we can tolerate discrimination against transgender people. I think that most voters would agree with me that that's wrong.
And would you have anything else to add to that, Andrew?
Yeah, again, your legal analysis must be different from your co-chair's, because the way this law operates, that man, because he identifies as a woman, is entitled under this law to the Brazilian bikini wax, and the fact that the spa worker refused to give it renders her in violation of this law that you're supporting.
I guess I wonder here that a lot of what we're hearing are really sort of emotional arguments about safety and about men and women and comfortability and all of this. And these are issues that are being debated nationally. But I guess what message do you think might come from this case nationally? I'd like to ask both of you that question. Casey, you first.
Well, certainly if Massachusetts chooses to repeal this law, they will send a message to people all over the country that Massachusetts is not a safe or welcoming place for transgender people. And I think about people like, you know, Chastity and Kelly and other folks who actually moved here. They fled other places where there was discrimination against transgender people to come somewhere where there wouldn't be discrimination. If and hopefully when Massachusetts votes to uphold this law, I think they will send a message to the nation much like the one they sent when they passed the law in the first place in 2016 with the support of a broad coalition of businesses and law enforcement officers and progressives and conservatives that, you know, this is not about policy or politics. This is actually just about people. You know, we're human beings and we want to be able to go about our daily lives. We're not doing anything wrong and we want to be left alone.
Andrew, is there a national message here? And, you know, some have said that a message from a blue state like Massachusetts may send a nationwide signal that this is open for changes across the country. Your thoughts?
Well, sure. I think that's true. And I think we've been seeing, especially recently, a national discussion about the importance of listening to women when they speak out. And one of the most disappointing aspects of this law's passage was how completely dismissive many state officials were of concerns expressed by women. We had a victim of sexual assault who spoke at the State House about having to share a locker room or shower with a male body against her will would re-traumatize her. And the former Senate president, Stan Rosenberg, said there's nothing to worry about. It's kind of dismissed her because someone who identifies as a woman is a woman. But again, biology is biology, anatomy is anatomy, and to that sexual assault victim, that is a traumatic experience that we shouldn't be so lightly dismissing. And then Maura Healey, the chief law enforcement officer, is in favor of this law, but she's also on record saying that people who aren't comfortable with the transgender bathroom usage or a men in a woman's locker room should just hold it.
And I'm gonna let Casey respond to both of those things. First of all, women not being heard if they might be uncomfortable, and then Attorney General Healey.
Well, that's just not true. You know, there is a broad coalition. There are over 50 sexual assault prevention organizations across the state that supported the passage of this law. They support upholding it with a yes on three vote. Women's voices have clearly been heard. You know, I'm certainly sympathetic to people who have never met a transgender person, are uncomfortable with the idea of sharing a space with a transgender person. I am a sexual assault survivor myself, so I am sympathetic to some of those experiences. But, you know, again, there is just no evidence that any of the anecdotes that No One Three cites happen. And you don't have to take our words for it. Folks can do their own research. You can go to freedomma.org. You can see the broad coalition of support, law enforcement officials from all across the state, sexual assault prevention experts from all across the state, advocates for women from all across the state resoundingly support a yes on three vote.
Okay, let's go to some callers here because we're going to run out of time. Ashlyn from West Tisbury, you're on the air.
Hi, my question was for both of you. I was wondering how both of you felt about the idea of gender-neutral bathrooms, and not to put it as holding it, but if someone were to choose to opt out of entering a bathroom due to their fears, as opposed to forcing, hypothetically, a trans woman, who, by the way, is also a woman, to hold it, to use his language. And I was just curious how you guys would feel about the idea that we say all bathrooms are for everyone, and then you make the decision about whether or not that's something you're comfortable with.
Okay. Andrew, you first.
Yeah, I would say all bathrooms are not for everyone. We have men's rooms and women's rooms, and we have separate restrooms for a reason. So here's the question. What do you do? You have an anatomical male who identifies as female, so they're not comfortable using the men's room. They want to use the women's room. You have anatomical biological females who want to use the women's room. They're not comfortable with male bodies in those spaces. So you have two conflicting rights to privacy and comfort. This law says that the biological women lose every time, and if they speak up or try to stop a male presence from entering those rooms, they face legal penalties. So I would ask Casey, do you believe biological women have a right to object to a male body in a public shower or locker room that they're using?
Casey?
I believe that there is no reason to think that transgender people are any less modest or believe in safety and privacy or value it any less than anybody else. You know, I don't have an opinion on gender-neutral bathrooms, but I do have an opinion on bathrooms, and that opinion is this. Transgender people are human beings. I am a human being. I have to use the restroom every couple of hours, just like everybody else. And if I can't use a restroom when I'm out at a restaurant, or I'm at my best friend's wedding, or I stopped by the bank, or I'm in a grocery store, then how am I supposed to go to those places? How am I supposed to function in public spaces? You know, we aren't committing any offenses against people. There's actually no evidence that this law even allows for that. But what we do want to do is be able to go about our daily lives, take care of our families, take care of each other. That's what this law allows us to do.
Andrew, can we speak to that a bit? If this law is repealed, what happens to people who have already transitioned? And let's discuss a little bit what the caller had mentioned. Are people going to be more comfortable seeing a transgender woman in the men's room than the ladies' room?
Well, I think if this law is repealed, then we go back to the way things were 2 years ago. And I'm sure at that point, most people used the facilities that made the most sense for them. Casey, certainly passes, I would say, in the jargon of the transgender movement, so would probably have no problem in a men's room. What would change is that if you have an anatomical male, and again, registered sex offenders can use this law. There was an amendment that tried to block registered level 2 and 3 sex offenders from using this law, and that was voted down overwhelmingly by the legislature when they passed it. The concern is people abusing this law and going into restrooms, and then women not having the right to speak out against it. I don't think anyone's going to speak out against Casey using the restroom. It's men abusing this law in women's spaces. That's the concern.
But to follow up, Andrew, there are a lot of transgender people who are not as clear-cut. It's not always going to be evident which gender and which bathroom is appropriate in the past interpretation. How would this be enforced if we return to the past interpretation?
Well, again, I think you've got two conflicting, potentially mutually exclusive rights to privacy and comfort. So we have to find a way, a common sense solution that protects the privacy, safety, and comfort of everyone. I know in schools, oftentimes they will attempt to have a student who doesn't fit neatly into a binary male or female space. And again, male and female bathrooms are designed for male and female bodies. If someone doesn't fit into one of those neatly, they can use the nurse's room or a staff bathroom or some other space where their privacy is protected and the privacy and safety and comfort of everyone else is protected as well. And I think we need a common sense solution like that and not force women into a scenario where they are not allowed to speak out against an unwanted male presence in a private space.
If I give you 15 seconds, can you do it?
Yeah, I shudder to think about how we would police the bodies question. And, you know, how are we going to identify when we're checking transgender people versus people who aren't? I just don't even understand how we do that and how that's a cogent argument that we're somehow increasing people's privacy and safety. I think that is very, very dangerous. And there is nothing to suggest that it's necessary, which is why law enforcement officers and sexual assault prevention experts support a yes on three.
Okay. Well, we are out of time, unfortunately. We have just enough time to give each of you enough time to make a closing statement. We're going to end with those. And Andrew Beckwith, president of the Massachusetts Family Institute. You go first.
Sure. So people ask me, what happens when this law is repealed? And as discussed before, virtually all scenarios of discrimination on the basis of gender identity will still be covered by state law. The only difference will be bathrooms and other intimate spaces. So what about someone whose anatomy doesn't match how they identify? We would go back to where things stood 2 years ago. And I think most people were using the facilities that made the most sense for them. And individual businesses were able to have policies that best served all of their customers. All that would continue. The one change would be that if, for example, a woman was uncomfortable with an unwanted male presence in a restroom or locker room, she could say something without fear of being sued or fined. And I, as a father, wouldn't have to worry about going to jail if I prevented a man from entering the locker room where my daughter is changing for swim lessons. There's been a lot of discussion over the past year, especially the past few weeks, about the importance of listening to women when they speak up about being threatened sexually. This law tells them we have to let men into intimate spaces, and they'd better be quiet about it. I think that's terrible and a dangerous mistake, and we should repeal this law.
Casey, closing statement.
We all believe in safety and privacy, including transgender people. I am a transgender man. I am a fiancé to a wonderful woman. I'm an uncle to two nieces that I would do anything for. I'm a godparent to the spunkiest little girl in Cambridge. I would never support a law that protected me at their expense. But here's what this law does do. I grew up feeding the ducks at Spy Pond in Stoneham with my grandfather. I saw my first ball game at Fenway Park with my dad. I grew up celebrating birthdays and other holidays at the Hilltop Steakhouse in Saugus. I buried my dad in a cemetery in Malden, and I scattered my mom off the Salem coast. These are all public places that this law ensures I can be, despite the fact that I happen to be a transgender person. Question three is about whether transgender people are safe and welcome in the place we call home. And I encourage voters to get the real facts at freedomma.org and to vote yes for dignity and respect for everybody.
Right. Casey Seferdini, Andrew Beckwith, I want to thank both of you. Also, Stephanie Ebert from the Boston Globe. I want to tell our listeners thank you as well. And you can listen back to the full debate at our website, radioboston.org. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.